Back to the area of Arctic drilling. That was new as well.
Arctic drilling was simply that all of us had been up there in cold weather, and there was lots of oil in Arctic drilling, both in Canada and in Alaska. To do Arctic drilling as you needed to do it, we had to have developed rigs that could be moved, even flown, moved on smaller load, truckloads, but places that would be compatible to the health of the people working up there. It was a hard life. So we started specializing in Arctic drilling, and we had a gentleman with our company who became foremost, a fellow named Ted Houck. Ted became a real expert in what kind of pumps, what kind of motors, what kind of protection do you need from the cold, and what techniques would we drill up there with, because you're drilling in permafrost, and permafrost is a condition in the Arctic that is very dangerous. It's on top of the ground. It doesn't have anything that'll bother you except you can't drill through it. We had to drill techniques to do that. We did. I keep saying we, the company did. All I did was cheer. That was my role, and that's how I was trained. But we became known as top hands in Arctic. That's why we moved to Russia in Siberia. And I can tell you all these places, wherever it was cold, they called us.
All this development of new technique, was that operating out of Tulsa? Were you
all out of Tulsa. No, we didn't mechanically operate here. We operated out of Odessa and Louisiana. We had places all over the world. Wherever it was close to operate. We had places in Alaska. But there's one thing for people that don't know business. You better have some fun. What I stress to you is I love that business. I still do. And I loved every day I went to work. I just hate to be in a business where I didn't care about it. Honest to God, I want people to know you can be happy in business. And I was. Not for the money, because sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. But for doing something and watching your people grow, watching things happen, it's a wonderful life. And I like the people in the oil fields.
Well, you like the roughnecks.
Because remember when I went to Mississippi the first year, couldn't get a home. They didn't want oil field trash. And we were oil field trash. And that was a tradition that went through the oil. And they were pretty accurate. So we went there and couldn't find a place to live. And there was a bunch of rigs coming in and sleeping in cars and all of that. And I had a wife, don't forget. So we were sitting in a little Methodist church in Brookhaven the first Sunday. The preacher got up and said, "We have visitors here. They're oil field trash. And I want someone in this congregation to give them a home to stay in." A lady stood up, and she was the wealthiest lady in that town, and gave us a lovely place in her home to work. From there, we've been lifelong friends ever since.
Wow.
But those are the stories that happened.
And you were called oil field trash from the pulpit.
Yes, we were. Because my wife undertook that attack. The people didn't think much of themselves. The roughnecks didn't. They almost tried to be rough, do a lot of drinking, a lot of carousing, etc. So we went in this campaign of cleaning that image up of themselves, letting them know that they're the best in the business. They know what they're doing, but they got to live differently. And they did. They changed.
So here you come in as a roughneck.
Yes.
While your father is operating a very successful business.
Yes.
And he had wealth.
Yes.
So tell us, you wanted to prove yourself to him, or you wanted to learn the business?
None of that. I didn't think that large. I'd go to work and I'd say, okay, what can I do today to make this a better company? And what can I do to make myself a better person? How do we go about it? Just like you do, just like we all do. I didn't worry about his wealth. I didn't worry about being his son. I didn't have to make any tracks that to be followed. But I thought there's got to be better ways of doing it. And each day we tried to do that, and we did. I was very pleased.
Okay, so you had a mind of wanting to figure out and make things better and improve and techniques and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
So that's what drove you on. And you were working for him, weren't you?
For
your father.
For him. But again, I'll say that much of your leadership comes from recognizing others that have talent, because you're not going to know it all. You're not going to be the best in anything. But you're going to have people that can do this thing better or that thing better, whether it's Arctic, whether it's the flying the rigs, whatever it is. So my main effort was identifying people that could make good things happen.
You had to impress a lot of people as you moved up in the ranks, because people would say, well, he started out as a roughneck.
Yeah.
That had to help you in your stature.
It did help, no doubt about it.
So when you went out to those rigs and talked to those roughnecks, they said, he's one of us.
One of us. And I went to their homes, and we had dinner with them, played bridge with them at night. We did all of those things. We did like them. You hit on a point. I like roughneck. I don't fake it. I, honest to God, find them to be good people, solid people. They knew that. They could tell that. And I didn't like them because of money. You liked them because just what they were. So a lot of my best friends today were roughnecks then.
Is that a certain kind of person then? And what kind of person becomes a roughneck?
People need work. Like right now, they're coming out your ears because all the automobile plants are shut. Believe it or not, they go back and forth. The labor market does. So when the boom was on all over the country, it's kind of hard getting good hands on drilling rigs. They can get paid more in various places. But in today's world, there's plenty of help from everywhere because their jobs are so scarce, so many available in places.